since the failed mercenary coup attempt of 2004, which had been followed by Secretary of State Colin Powell's reassuring meeting with Obiang at Foggy Bottom, the Bush administration had quietly trained Equatorial Guinea's intelligence service, occasionally shared intelligence about threats to the regime and to offshore oil operations, and permitted training of Equatorial Guinea's onshore police and security forces by the defense contractor MPRI, with human rights education as a part of the curriculum. The Bush administration had also inaugurated naval training exercises among visiting U.S. Navy warships, the nascent Equatorial Guinea Navy and Coast Guard, and private security patrol boats operated by ExxonMobil, Marathon, and Hess, exercises that were designed, in part, to speed the time required by armed Equatorial Guinean vessels to reach ExxonMobil's offshore oil platforms if they came under assault. The administration dispatched General Charles Wald, deputy commander of European Command at the time, to meet with Obiang and assure him of American interest in the shared responsibility of protecting U.S. investments in the country. Not all of Bush's advisers fully accepted this proposition. Cindy Corville of the National Security Council told Obiang's senior aides that, because of market forces, the U.S. would benefit from Gulf of Guinea oil whether the U.S. had a good relationship with EG or not. The administration would obviously not lightly abandon ExxonMobil, Marathon, and Hess, however. As the Bush administration's quiet defense and intelligence cooperation with Equatorial Guinea deepened, Obiang pronounced that he considered the United States to be our best ally, and he was lengthy and effusive in his praise for the current state of U.S.-EG relations. The crypto sanctions Smith complained about, as well as the limitations of Equatorial Guinea's military forces, meant that it was easier for American-headquartered oil corporations to handle aspects of Malabo's defenses than for Obiang to establish the capacity within his own Ministry of Defense. "The companies have better capacity to surveil than we do," Brigadier Francisco Nugua, a special advisor to Obiang for national security, said. ExxonMobil and its peers installed and operated sophisticated domain awareness equipment in the waters around Equatorial Guinea, radars and integrated communications that allowed the company's security departments to track, identify, and monitor potentially threatening naval traffic. "If they see something, they communicate," Nugua said. Cooperation between the oil companies and the Equatoguinean Navy and Coast Guard evolved to the point where, by 2009, the oil firms monitored not only a hostile invasion but illegal immigration into Equatorial Guinea by boat from neighboring poorer countries such as Cameroon. As long as these security engagements remained secret and ran on bureaucratic autopilot in Washington, the United States seemed prepared to deepen its partnership with Malabo. The difficulty was, every so often, news reporting or investigations by human rights groups would turn up fragmentary information about the growing security ties, and the disclosures would provoke angry denunciations by members of Congress and human rights advocates. The U.S. Navy, for example, conducted 4 or 5 training visits to Equatorial Guinea after 2008 under its Africa Partnership Station program, until publicity about the engagement led the State Department to demand that the training contacts be suspended until Obiang's human rights performance measured up. Fortunately for Obiang, coup-prone African governments rolling in oil but lacking in arms and intelligence to defend their bounty had a discreet alternative to the Pentagon and the CIA for defense support: Israel. Quietly, the Bush administration encouraged Obiang to enter into security and commercial ties with Tel Aviv. During the Cold War, the United States and Israel had occasionally collaborated covertly to shore up allied governments in Africa. More recently, Israel had extended its global influence by using security partnerships to export its high-technology equipment and its hard-earned lessons in counterterrorism and defense against strategic surprise. Retired Mossad and Israel Defense Forces officers formed consultancies to sell electronic surveillance equipment, drones, gunboats, helicopters, and training packages to wealthy, insecure African regimes facing insurgencies or the threat of coup makers. These deals often had at least as much of a commercial as a security motivation, but even when the profit motive figured to a great extent, the exported sales and training packages strengthened Israel by providing additional revenue for its defense and intelligence industries, and by building new global networks and political alliances. Israeli trainers and consultants peddling intelligence and defense systems quietly equipped Angola's oil-rich, formerly Marxist government and Nigeria's Joint Task Force, which battled unauthorized oil-thieving militants in the Niger Delta, as opposed to the authorized ones. In 2005, around the time the CIA opened an intelligence liaison with Obiang's security service, a Mossad officer approached Ruben Maya, Obiang's national security advisor, according to a consultant for Equatorial Guinea's government. A meeting in Paris followed. The Mossad suggested that Obiang make a quiet trip to Israel and they would scan his plane and review his security, the advisor recalled. This was a typical method by which Israel opened new intelligence supply relationships. It was the counterintelligence equivalent of a bank offering a television to customers willing to open a new account.